You are about to enter a world beyond your five senses. A world where doubt and certainty walk hand in hand. A world where strangeness is king and mystery is his bastard child. You are about to enter Lionel Nimrod's inexplicable world. People often ask me, Lionel, how did you first become interested in the unexplained? It was at a Lord Taverner's charity tea in 1976 that I first met with the famous psychic and clairvoyant Betty Menley. Betty told me that I was a wonderful person whose greatness would one day be appreciated by all mankind. Touched by her honesty, I've labored long and hard for the cause, which explains, along with my problems, which the press have delighted in wallowing in, why I've appeared so rarely on your screen since that fateful day. Not for want of offers, I can tell you. Tonight, as we end another series, I will be asking, can we explain the unexplained? Join me, if you dare, in this, my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's inexplicable world of the unexplained. And please welcome your driving instructors in the Morris Marina of the Macabre.
I'm Stuart Lee.
And the navel sewn into my sports kit, there's Richard Herring. Hello and welcome to the inexplicable world. In the last 11 shows we've explained so much, and yet so much remains unexplained. What makes a man hate his brother? Is it because when the man was little, his brother used to make him eat cat food, slam the kitchen door on his face, and stamp all over his tabutio players for a joke?
Whatever happened to that kid at school in your class, the one with stupid sticking up hair and big yellow teeth? He sat at the back in physics, but he left in the fourth year, remember? Did his family really move to Northampton, as your teacher claimed? Or was there a more sinister reason for his disappearance?
Who pays the piper? And does the piper in turn pay his own national insurance contributions, or are they covered by this mysterious employer?
Why am I chased every night through a huge maze by giant rats with the faces of all the other stand-up comedians in the world? Well, very soon these and every other unanswered mystery will be answered. So at the end of tonight's show, philosophers and vicars the world over will be able to hang up their philosopher and vicar costumes forever and join each other for a spot of friendly, naked wrestling in front of a roaring open fire.
And as we're answering all remaining mysteries, we're also going to try and break the world record for solving as many mysteries as possible in a half-hour radio show. And so to help us adjudicate, would you please welcome TV's Norris McWhirter? Norris, hello.
Hello.
Now, Norris, you're perhaps best known as the public face and figurehead of the extreme right-wing group, the Freedom Association, who allegedly tried to prevent graduates with left-wing or liberal tendencies from finding employment.
Yes, that's right.
But to millions of children throughout the UK, you're the likeable, friendly, wise uncle figure from TV's The Record Breakers.
Yes, that is true also.
So, Norris, what is the record for answering the most previously unsolved mysteries in a half-hour radio programme?
Well, Richard, that record stands at 25 mysteries solved. This record was achieved by me, Norris McWhirter, in the Radio 2 show Norris McWhirter's I Told You So. And believe you me, that will take some beating. I will be adjudicating your attempt from inside my Record Breakers verification booth here. Now, the clock started 5 minutes ago, and you've answered not mystery so far. I wish you the very best of British luck, gentlemen. Speak higher.
Speak after you too, Norris.
Hurry up, Rich Norris is trying to distract you.
Right. And to assist us in our record-breaking attempt, our studio audience tonight is entirely made up of people to whom some inexplicable thing has happened.
Yeah, for example, here is our old friend Ted Wilding White, author of the seminal work Mysteries of the Unknown, Osborne, 1977. Hello, Ted.
Hello.
Your book has been a big influence on the show.
Thank you, Stu. My belief is that people return to the scene of their untimely death to haunt the living, as I think this reconstruction from my book will prove. The 12th of July, 1968. Young Bob Aslett arrives at number 314 Penrith Road, Leeds, for a very special date. A date with death.
Hello.
Hello, is Emma in, please?
Who?
Emma. I picked her up last night hitchhiking. We fell in love and arranged to go out for a drink tonight. Is she in?
You fool, of course she's in.
Emma was killed on this very spot in a road accident exactly 10 years ago last night.
Oh, Sebastian.
And now you come round trying to stir our grief up again.
Oh, hello, Bob.
Emma, thank God. Look, here she is. Where'd they go? I was just talking to your parents.
My parents?
Yeah, and they told me that...
My parents both died exactly 10 years ago today on this very spot in a freak door-answering disaster.
Oh, I am sorry.
It's all right. They were getting too old to look after themselves anyway.
But I was just talking to them.
You can't have been, Bob.
Excuse me, miss. Is that your car parked on the corner there?
Oh, no, officer. It belongs to Bob here.
Bob, miss? But you are alone. Although I remember now, a man called Bob, who owned a car very similar to that one there, was killed in this very spot exactly 10 years ago tonight, when I accidentally struck him repeatedly about the head and face with my thumb and fist. Ashamed of my unprovoked attack on the innocent man, I drowned myself in a bath of acid straight away. Exactly 10 years ago tonight, on this very spot.
So, you're a ghost? But so am I.
I am me. I'm a ghost too, look. Whoa! I thought you were real.
Me and Keith thought you two were real. We were trying to scare you.
Yes, we were.
It appears we've all been wasting our time then.
Yes.
I suggest we cut our losses, get on down to the home of some slightly over-emotional adolescent girl who's just on the verge of womanhood, and see if we can get her committed to a special hospital.
All right,
off we go.
Well, Ted, your evidence proves that people do return to the scenes of their death on the anniversary of their demise. Ted?
Mystery number one, solved.
Yes, one whole mystery. I was wondering at this point if you both would let me have samples of your urine.
Why? Well, to check that we aren't using illegal drugs to help us in our record attempt, of course. Isn't it, Norris?
Yes, that would be it.
Well, can we do it later, Norris? We've got to get on with the show.
Damn.
The early 1980s philosopher-comedian, Ben Elton, was thought to have solved a whole series of modern mysteries of everyday life by arguing that fairies and elves are responsible for putting Marmite in the margarine and smearing baked beans down the pedal bin. But this clip from the BBC Two documentary series Corridor cast doubt on his theories.
From 1980 to 1982, Siobhan Harris was Ben Elton's personal assistant. Today, she lives on Social Security in Chessington. We met her at her local laundrette.
Well, back in the early 1980s, Ben Elton would do his joke about how you always lose one sock at the laundrette, and everyone would laugh and then go home and vote Labour. But look at my washing. Socks don't always go missing at the laundrette. Sometimes you might lose the odd one, but by no means always. It's just exaggeration for comic effect.
Or lying.
Well, yes. Ben Elton had lied to everyone, and to avoid detection, he realised he had to engineer it so that his so-called observational comic routines became true facts. Consequently, Ben Elton took to hiding in the gaps behind the spin dryers in laundrette. Then he'd use a fishing rod to steal one of each of the customer's socks. I suggest that some good might come of the theft if he gave the socks to the homeless. Ben Elton just spat in my face.
But Ben Elton's sock theft was just the beginning. Before long, he selected his next victim, the supermarket.
But soon, Ben Elton's fans wanted more and more, so he made up a joke about how supermarket trolleys always have a broken wheel. But supermarket trolleys are a triumph of modern design, and are by and large serviceable, see?
Oh, yes, that seems fine.
Or at least they were once. Late each night, Ben Elton would break into a supermarket. Once inside, he would set up lines of electromagnets along the aisles to make all the trolleys veer to one side. If a policeman saw him, Ben would distract them with a story about making a smell or some poo in a toilet. And then he'd go back to work. After he'd finished, he'd stalk around the aisles, stuffing his face with caviar, battery-farmed eggs in non-biodegradable cartons, and South African fruit. Then he would spray all the CFC aerosols in the shop up into the atmosphere and do a little dance. He seemed strangely excited.
But fame was like a drug to Elton. Finally, he turned his lying eye to British Rail.
Ben Elton came up with the idea that British Rail milk cartons always spit milk at you when you open them. And at that stage, all it would have taken was a British Rail caterer or a small boy in his audience to shout out, "No, they don't," especially if you tip them away from you when you open them. And he would have been revealed for the fraud he was. So, Ben Elton started placing tiny explosive charges on British Rail milk cartons. Once, one of the cartons exploded in the face of a train driver near Eastbourne. The train crashed. As I crawled from the wreckage, I saw Ben Elton hiding in a bush, laughing at the carnage, his face smeared with human blood. I knew then that I had to escape.
The truth about Ben Elton there. And Remy, you didn't see Arthur Askey resorting to that kind of thing for his amusing insect songs, did you?
No, well done, Stu. Another left-wing fool shown for what he truly is.
Come on, Rich, let's knock up a few mysteries as quickly as we can. Do flowers really respond to music? Experiments here at the Inexplicable World show that if you play plants Handel or Mozart, their growth rate increases, whereas Hawkwind's Warrior at the Edge of Time album makes them grow their leaves really long, take loads of drugs, and go off and live in a van.
Whatever happened to the likely lad? Well, after a brief flirtation with serious acting, James Bolan went back to doing crappy sitcoms. And Rodney Hughes did the same, except without the brief flirtation with serious acting. Or the return to crappy sitcoms.
Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth to be young?
Can we attain eternal youth? MP Harvey Proctor searched for his lost youth in the toilets at Victoria Station. Luckily, the youth saw him coming and was able to nip out of the cubicle window before Harvey could catch him.
Freud wrote, "The great unsolved mystery is, what do women want?" Me and Freud both. When I go out with girls, I take them to the arcade in Soho and let them watch me play pinball. Then we go and see a film in the XXX sexy cinema. And none of them ever seem to want to see me again. The mystery remains. What is it that women want?
Well, obviously, Rich, in your case, what women want is someone else.
Yes, Stuart, that's right. Women want real men like me, Norris McGregor. And with the help of womankind, I will sire a newer, stronger, record-breaking breed. Think higher!
Thank you, Norris. Now, which came first, the chicken or the egg? In our audience to tell us is early 1980s TV novelty foreign scientist, Dr. Heinz Wolf.
Guten Tag, Stuart.
Now, Heinz, we know you best in Britain as the host of The Great Egg Race, so tell us, in a race between a chicken and an egg, which would come first?
Well, it would be the chicken, Stuart, every time. An egg, you see, has no motor ability at all. Unless, of course, it is travelling in one of my amusing inventions.
Well, thank you, Heinz.
Not at all. To be honest, I am glad of the work. Fame is ein fickle Fräulein.
Tell me, Heinz, is there another series of The Great Egg Race in the pipeline?
Not at the moment, Stuart, no.
Herr Wolf, it must be an exciting time to live in Germany, what with the reunification of time.
Right. Spontaneous human combustion. What is it that causes people to unexpectedly burst into flames? Our next guest is someone who regularly spontaneously combusts, David Tinkham.
Good evening.
David, could you combust for us now, please?
Well, no, I can't, can I? Obviously, it has to be spontaneous. That's the whole point of spontaneous combustion. And it annoys me that everyone just keeps going on about the combustion. I'm spontaneous in loads of other ways, aren't I, Trina?
Oh, yeah. Once we were at Twycross Zoo, and David just, without me knowing, went and bought me an ice cream. I haven't asked him to or anything. I never know what will happen next.
See?
To be honest, David, it can get a bit annoying, actually. Sometimes I just want to stay in and watch telly, but you insist on whisking me off to Paris or hiring a calypso band to entertain me.
Well, I thought you liked it.
No, David. And I've got something to tell you. I've met someone else. He's not spontaneous like you, but I feel much more relaxed around him.
What?
Excellent, David. Excellent. I knew you could do it. Watch him burn.
Thank you. Thanks very much indeed, David and Trina.
The haunting music leads us into the Twilight Zone, home of all that is mysterious and odd. But where is this shadowy place where so few people go and from whence even fewer return? Well, I myself have been there. And I can reveal that the Twilight Zone is Zone 6 of the London Underground system. Its mystical epicentre located just outside West Ruislip.
And in the Twilight Zone we find urban myths, tales of mysterious and unpleasant occurrences, stories told all around the country which always happen to a friend of your friend's sister. But are they true? Or are they just lies like you realised when you were about 12?
I don't know, Stu. My sister used to come into my bedroom at night and tell me stories about the awful things which happened to her friend's friend. I was so scared I couldn't sleep and inevitably I wet the bed. Eventually I told her, Jill, I'm 25 years old and I live in London and you live in Somerset. These nighttime visits must end. Go home to your husband and children.
But Richard, I've managed to track down this friend of a friend of your sister's to find out the truth once and for all, and she's here tonight.
Hello, my sister's friend's friend.
Hello, my friend's friend's brother. Nice to be here.
Now, one of the scariest stories I heard about you was about the takeaway meal. Was that true?
Oh, yes. I bought a fried chicken meal and was eating it with my boyfriend, who doesn't have a proper name, in a dark car. Halfway through one piece, I turned on the light and saw I was eating a rat that must have fallen into the frying pan. Obviously, it was a bit of a shock. I went mad and had to go to a special hospital. All right now, though.
Yeah, but a chicken and a rat, they taste quite different, you'd think.
Not if they're both coated in a delicious southern fried batter. And anyway, it's easy to make mistakes where cooking and animals are concerned. I myself once tried to dry my boyfriend's pedigree poodle in the microwave. Nasty. Still, accidents will happen.
No, but I heard it was a cat.
No, that was the other time. You just thought I would have remembered a thing like that.
What about this strange granny you found sitting in your car in the multi-story? That story can't be true, my sister's friend's friend.
Well, my friend's friend's brother. I'm afraid it was. It was the day after my surprise birthday party, when all my friends and family had burst into the kitchen to find me naked and covered in dog food with my dog. I hadn't been so embarrassed since I smashed the basin at my boyfriend's posh parents' house when I tried to use it as a toilet. Anyway, I digress. I had just finished for the day at whatever job it is that I do in the generic Midland town where I probably live, and I was going to give the granny you mentioned a lift home when I noticed she had hairy hands, like an axe murderer might have. So I tricked her out of the car and sped off. When I got home, I found an 8-foot-long blood-spattered axe in the glove compartment. I went mad again, as usual, and was back in a special hospital before you could write a thesis on the emergence of a modern folktale tradition.
Why do you think that this axeman went to the trouble of dressing up as an old woman and sitting in a car to get you, rather than just waiting in the shadows in his own man's clothes and leaping out at you?
Well, my friend's friend's brother's friend, it was because he was a mad axeman, wasn't he?
Where was your boyfriend that time?
Oh dear, I'm afraid he'd been murdered by then. I remember his slaying clearly because it was the same day I collected my holiday photos. You know, and one was a picture of a burglar's bum with my toothbrush up it. So, to cheer me up, my boyfriend took me for a drive in the New Forest, but we ran out of petrol. My boyfriend had very little understanding of a car's basic needs. Anyway, to cut a long story short, the day ended up with my boyfriend's severed head being banged on the roof of my car by a mad axeman.
Yeah, it's a shame about your boyfriend thingy, isn't it?
Oh, it doesn't matter. I was going to chuck him anyway. I found he was becoming too much of a narrative device.
That the same boyfriend who fell onto the Hoover attachment.
Who are you talking to, Richard?
My sister's friend's friend.
Your sister's friend's friend? But your sister's friend's friend died 10 years ago today on this very spot in a studio discussion program accident.
But you were just talking to her.
No, Richard, not me. Anyway, Richard, I think you'd better go and change your trousers now, haven't you?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
You fool, you've wasted it. I could have had that.
Deeper into the Twilight Zone is the dusky realm named Coincidence. There is nothing more frightening on this earth than when you meet someone and find out their brother has the same birthday as your dad's friend.
1922, Switzerland. Jung publishes his book, Synchronicity, arguing that coincidence is in reality a structured web of connected events. 1982, Newcastle. Pop musician Sting, who has never heard of Jung or read any books at all, releases his pop album, also called Synchronicity, and identical to the last detail to Jung's book, except sung in a high-pitched fake Jamaican accent and accompanied by the distinctive guitar work of Andy Summers. Coincidence or something more sinister?
1993. I am standing in a supermarket when a mad tramp walks towards me, muttering my name over and over again. He stops in front of me, lunges towards me and picks something off the top shelf. A jar of herrings. Coincidence or something more sinister?
When I was a child, I lived in a home with two other people, both with exactly the same surname as me. Coincidence or something more sinister?
1987, ITV screens Jeremy Beadle's You've Been Framed. 1992, BBC One screens Shane Ritchie's Caught in the Act. Coincidence? Or just the usual lack of imagination of light entertainment television?
You may as well give in, gentlemen. The show is almost over and you're still 5 mysteries short. My record is safe.
Don't speak too soon, Norris McWhirter. The show may be nearly over, but there is still one more person with an encyclopedia of answers at his musical fingertips. Please welcome Peter Fenn and Peter Fenn's Hammond Organ Believe It or Not file.
Thank you. Hello again, all my many fans, and welcome once more to what so many of you are writing in to say is your favourite part of the show. Me!
Hurry up, Peter.
I beg your pardon. Only kidding. Okie dokie, believe it or not, after 11 fact-filed shows, my Believe It or Not file is now completely empty of facts. But don't worry, my repertoire of Hammond organ classics is far from depleted and will be bringing easy listening pleasure to the elderly and infirm for many generations to come.
Oh dear, that's a bit of a shame, but this week's Hammond organ music was?
Well, as it's the end of the series, I've tried to show you there's more to the Hammond organ than tie a yellow ribbon and chosen a raunchy little number entitled Hold On, I'm a Comin'.
By?
Well, Richard, that dollop of H.P. sauce was provided by the original H&P, Hayes and Porter. And if you're listening, guys, Hayes, I'm a supporter of that little ditty. When Mrs. Fenn and I are enjoying our marital rites, it is Hold On, I'm a Coming that she usually finds herself tunelessly singing.
It is sad that this will be the last time we'll talk to you, Peter.
Yes, we've struck up quite a friendship, haven't we, Richard? I don't think much of Stuart, as you know, but as for you, well, if I were a younger man, who knows? Viva España to you all! God bless and goodbye!
Oh, Peter, that was beautiful.
Rich, who are you talking to?
Peter Fenn.
Peter Fenn, the Hammond organist.
Of course.
Peter Fenn is dead, Rich. He and his wife died 10 years ago tonight when the Hammond organ they were chained to toppled over during a rendition of Hold On, I'm a Coming.
That's impossible. I was just talking to him.
You can't have been.
The Guinness Book of Records rulebook clearly states that no record can have assistance from beyond the grave.
Damn, if only this was one of those Greek tragedies where at the end they'd have some sort of thing to sort everything out, a kind of deus ex machina.
That's a coincidence, Stu. I think I noticed a machina at the back somewhere. Oh yeah, here it is. It's huge.
Coincidence, Rich, or something more sinister. Still, I wonder if it's still got a deus inside it. Rub it and see.
Yes! Look, up there!
Who's that coming down the death slide from the top? I don't believe it. It's Lionel Nimrod.
Thank you, trapping fools. I've arrived in your hour of need to defeat the dark forces of evil Norris McWhirter.
Thank goodness. You know, it really is an honour to meet you at last, Mr. Nimrod. I used to watch Star Ark every Saturday evening. It was so scary, I had to hide behind the sofa.
Yes, still today when I go round to visit even very good friends of mine, they see me coming and dive behind the sofa. And they won't come out no matter how much I batter upon their doors demanding vodka, such as my talent here. But enough talk. There's an important task in hand. I will answer 5 more of your trifling problems. Let the gathered throng put their remaining worries to me.
Okay, number 1.
Why do fools fall in love?
Yes. They fall in love because they meet someone who appears to be a charming, sweet flower of innocence. But she turns out to be a calculating, manipulative, black-hearted whore. That's why. Next question.
Okay, next question. Is there a surefire way to avoid a hangover?
Ah, yes. I've discovered the way to avoid a hangover is to never stop drinking.
How can I prolong the life of my tights and stockings?
There's nothing more troublesome than a short-lived tight. In my experience, you should rinse them out in warm water, wring them out carefully and put them in a plastic bag. Leave them overnight in your freezer and then thaw out the next day and your problem should be over.
That is only 4 questions, Mr. Nimrod.
You fool! Have you understood nothing? Has it never troubled you in all these weeks of our intimacy why it is that I am so much wiser than ye?
No.
I have used you as receptacles for the juice of my will, and now you have outlived your usefulness. Do you recognize this?
Yes, it's the Lionel Nimrod laser ray gun toy.
With one important modification. It is set on kill.
Does this mean we're not going to get paid, then?
Die, worthless scum, die!
Oh, Stuart! Oh, Stuart, don't die!
Oh, Rich, it's too late!
Stuart! You know that time you bought those French fancies to impress that girl, and when you opened them, there were only the yellow ones left? I had eaten the others. I'm sorry, forgive me.
You! Damn you! Damn you to hell!
Now for you, worm!
You can't kill me, Lionel.
Why not?
Because I am already dead. I died 10 years ago tonight. In this very studio. During a particularly boring edition of my music.
Nice try, Richard Herring, but I'm no fool. They are gone.
Did they leave their urine samples?
Now, my idiot friends, I will solve the ultimate mystery. All that my messenger, Betty Mentney, has revealed to me, the whole wondrous truth about myself. I'm God. Look upon my wonders and despair. I command the county of Cornwall to sink beneath the mud. Let Solihull in the West Midlands burn. Explode in a ball of fire. Radio 4 will cease its tiresome broadcast. The sea and the land do my bidding. Behold, Eriki, the soil spirit is here. And the little fat elves, can you see them? Yes, Eriki, I've told them I have, I know. And I've revealed to you my glory in all its glory. Come here to me. As moths are drawn to other slightly larger moths. Come and touch the face of God.
Congratulations, Lionel. You've broken the mystery-solving world record. You are a record breaker.
World is performed by Tom Baker, Richard Herring, Stuart Lee, me, Rebecca Front, and Armando Iannucci. It was written by Stuart Lee and Richard Herring and produced by the inexplicably unexplainable Sarah Smith. Now all inexplicable things have been explained. Richard and Stuart are dead. Peter Penn is a ghost from beyond time. The studio is in ruins. And Lionel Nimrod is on his way to a special hospital. But we'll be back for a new series later in the year.